Namaste, salam, and good morning, or good afternoon, or good evening, depending on which time zone you are in. My name is Deven, and on behalf of Service Space, welcome you all to Awaken Talks. Thank you for joining us today. The purpose of these calls are to plant seeds of kindness and compassion. And while in a way, we are all of us in our inner and outer journeys, but these calls really allow us to hold space for some guests. Who are from all walks of life, and they really inspire us by the spirit of service. And behind each of these calls, there's a whole team of, volunteers whose invisible work really allow these calls to manifest. Today, our guests are singer and musician Daniel Nemoth, filmmaker and educator Ellie Walton, and architect and designer Anand Soneja. And the call will be moderated by our dear brother Nemo. So we'd like to start the conversation with maybe some silence just to anchor ourselves in the present moment. So I invite you all to please be in about a minute of silence. So welcome again to Awaken Talks in conversation with Daniel Nemoth, Ellie Walton, and Anand Soneja, moderated by Nemo. In a few minutes, we'll hand over the call to Nemo, who will introduce today's panelists and also start the conversation on our theme, which is inner voice, service, and the creative process. And during the call, Nemo will also take audience questions and reflections. So anytime during the talk, if you'd like to share any questions for panelists or for Nemo, feel free to share them on a live stream patch. There's a chat box on the live stream page. And you could also send it us through email on ask@servicespace.org, which is ask@servicespace.org. And each of these, Awaken Talks, as I said, are led by a group of volunteers. And just a friendly reminder that we are on this virtual space, which has its, technology constraints also. So sometimes if, things, there's some glitch, and if some panelists are logged out, please allow us some time to have them back. And so looking forward to this call. And to introduce Nemo, I would like to invite Simba.
Hello everyone, my name is Simran. Nemo and his music really inspire me, and I'm so happy to introduce him today. When I first met Nemo in Ahmedabad, I was just 5 years old. He started singing a song from The Lion King, and I liked being with him instantly. Nemo loves kids, and kids love Nemo. For the past 10 years, he has been working with the children living in the slums near the Gandhi Ashram in Ahmedabad. Nemo, using music and theater, he has created shows like Ekatva and Jayajagat that tell inspiring stories. The stories are about unity, courage, truth, love, and kindness. I learned so much about people like Gandhiji, Vinobaji, Malala, and many such inspiring people from these shows. The children from the slums traveled the world with Nemo to share these stories. While doing big things, Nemo cares a lot about small things. For instance, the children coming for rehearsals will keep their chappals and shoes neatly in a line. Nemo will start and end their practice sessions with a prayer. Around 7 years ago, Nemo started sharing his songs with the world as a gift. He calls it Empty Hands Music. And communities from around the world invite him to share his music and messages of love, kindness, and hope. About 2 years ago, my classmates and I made a card for Nemo, inviting him to visit our school here in Oroville. We were thrilled when he said yes. We all sang his songs in the school and we had so much fun meeting him. I can go on and on. Love you, Nemo. Over to you.
Love you, Simu. What a blessing to have you be here with us, dear. Thank you for sharing. And thank you, everyone, for joining. We don't know who's here with us, but we know at least 6-7 of us are here. And thank you, everybody, for joining today for the Awaken call. It's a really special and a very humbling opportunity for me to discuss over the next hour with Daniel, Anand, and Ellie. And if I was to give you one honest truth from the bottom of my heart, these are probably three of my favorite artists on this planet. And it has to do a lot because of who they are as human beings. And it's a real privilege to be here. Thank you, Daniel, Ellie, and Anand Bhai for saying yes to today. And we look forward to all of your guys' love, wisdom, experiences to be shared over the next hour. I'll start by doing a brief introduction of each of these amazing souls. And I'll start with Daniel, a brother, a soul brother, as I always call Ellie, my soul sister. Dan and I met in 2012 because of a synchronicity of beautiful events. I don't know if I know too many human beings on this planet, personally, that make a living and raise a family because of the words that they write and the melodies they create with those words. And to further deepen that, for that to be your, not only your bread and butter, but to have deep, deep rooted impact on the people that listen to those words and those songs because of the messages in them. So for me, Daniel's a rare DNA, an amazing musician and songwriter, but the way that he shares and expresses his songs, and I've got the blessings to have seen him perform live and virtually with hundreds of people, at least when I've been around, hundreds or thousands actually. And it's just so powerful every time he's on stage, because there's just something that comes from the heart and the whole creative process that eventually comes out of his vocal cords and his heart, and it touches people in so many powerful ways. The man has written 23 albums. I struggled, I think, in my whole career to write one. thousands of songs, and I'm sure, I don't know how many thousands of performances, live performances, literally. His music has reached all parts of this planet, lot of major television events and shows and the Super Bowl, and he's performed at the Parliament of World Religions as one of the key performers. Just a lot of beauty, and then alongside just everything, his message, all of his messages lie in the soul of humanity. And he also finds his ways in so many beautiful ways to serve. And I look forward to hearing some of that today. He's been my musical inspiration. And when I was pretty much done as a career musician, after listening to his music, it awoke something in me to start writing music again. So I can, you know, I just feel blessed to have him as a brother, to have him on this call with us to share. Thank you. Thank you, Daniel, for joining.
Thanks, Nemo. Thanks.
And I'll share about my sister, Ellie. Like I said, she's my soul sister. Again, God has his ways, and he introduced us miraculously somehow. When she came to India on a Fulbright scholarship. She's a documentary filmmaker by trade. And she's done two master's degrees in Edinburgh and in the UK. But really she is just like a, she's an activist, an educator, a mother, a friend. But I think for me, it's just amazing to see her in action, because as a filmmaker, she's so invisible. And it's more than just not being, not impacting the natural response of the people she's in front of. She does that because she has the capacity to develop so much loving trust with the people around her and build relationships such that when she's carrying a camera into any space, it feels like there's nobody there. And that is probably one of the toughest things to do as a documentary filmmaker. And to be able to have people share their natural presence and being and be honest and open is more telling of Ellie's spirit and personality than just her trade. And she has done so many pieces of work on all different themes, from social justice to education to immigration. I mean, so many causes, so many nonprofits, so many music videos, and her documentaries have been screened at some of the top documentary film festivals in the planet, you know, like NYC Doc or Full Frame or AFI Doc. So it's just amazing to see how grassroots, how committed she is to connecting with community and with a deep purpose, and yet how much people resonate constantly with what she shares on the screen. So she's definitely a magician, and just a nice little tidbit is, when she was young, her name was Jupiter. That was what she called herself. And I got some little secret recordings that I'm going to share with you when she was 8 years old. But love you, Ellie. Thank you for being here with us.
Love you too. I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. And our last of the three artists, which we are calling Heartists, is an amazing architect, which we also, I love calling Anand Bhai specifically a heartkitect, because he truly imbibes every cell in his body is connected from the soul to his work in spirit, from conceptualization to execution of an actual project or building. He graduated from IPSA Rajkot. It's amazing. He's had an amazing mentor, and now he's become an amazing mentor for many. B.B. Doshi is probably one of the most well-renowned architects in the history of India, and he was Anand's mentor, who Anand studied under, did his thesis under, but also worked with. And it's just amazing to see that B.B. Doshi's spirit, like, literally flow through the spirit of Anand when he's in work. I've had the blessing to work on a project with Anand that was very dear to my heart. And it was such a magical experience to work together for almost 2.5 years, very closely. And just see, I guess, what shined for me in working in creating a theater with Anand Bhai was not only the skill and the research and the passion behind every detail of the concept building to execution, but for me, there's the humility involved is just tremendous. And when you have such talent, but you are so open to hearing, to listening, to bending ideas and listening to the people around you to make sure that the best product is created, not just your product. It's just amazing, Anand Bhai, the way you embrace each process of each project. So really look forward to hearing about some of that today. And lastly, I just think it's really special. So I've worked with a lot of young kids over the years, especially those that are closer to me, with some of these musical projects. And recently, just a few months ago, one of them who's doing his engineering degree was asking me, you know, because of COVID, things have slowed down at college and he wants to just get an experience. And between him and Anand Bhai is a huge gap of experience and understanding and wisdom and time availability. And when I reached out to Anand Bhai just to get feedback on how can we provide Bhownik an experience of engineering, a civil engineering, Anandbhai literally like just said, here, I'll take him under my wings and I'll work with him. I'll have classes with him virtually one or two times a week. And this is not a graduate of engineering. This is a kid that is aspiring to be a graduate in engineering. And it was just so humbling, Anandbhai, for you to take that time out in your crazy schedule and be ready to be like, here, I'll work with him. I'll help him be grow and learn, and I might even learn from him. Thank you, brother, for being who you are, and look forward to hearing more.
Thank you so much, Anandbhai.
Yeah, so I think, you know, I know we have limited time. I think we can probably do like 4 or 5 hours with these three souls. But I wanted to start with kind of our early beginning stages for all of you. And maybe in a 2 minute soundbite, because we want to get through a bunch of things. So I'm going to try to stay committed to the time frames for each of us. But growing up, what was your dream and how did it evolve? Many times it's way different than what we're doing right now. And how did you connect with your art form per se? And what influenced you? What kind of brought you to this direction that you've now walked on over the last decade or maybe actually much longer? But and so I'm going to start with Miss Eleanor Jupiter Walton.
Okay. Wow. Whew. I'm not good at sound bites, but let me try. Wow. So what was my dream? You know, I was thinking the other day when I was a kid, I remember my mom would throw these parties and I would wait outside with like sidewalk chalk and say, you are not allowed in unless you dance. And I was thinking about like, man, why didn't I become a dancer? I was like, even today, like how I lose myself is like putting on some tunes and dancing around the kitchen. But I was thinking about like how, like in some ways for me, filmmaking is kind of like dancing, and how like, what do dancers do? I think they listen, like they listen to like the rhythm. And for me, so much of my work is like really connecting with communities and like connecting with the rhythm of the neighborhood, connecting with the rhythm of families. Like, as you said, like building that trust and you know, like kind of capturing what's unfolding, but in a kind of dance. And I think as a kid, growing up in DC in a neighborhood called Mount Pleasant, like for me, I would say, you know, one of like the early moments that really kind of set me on this path was actually a moment where there was a shooting in my neighborhood. And a guy who lived in my neighborhood was shot by a police officer. And I think that led to riots in my neighborhood, an uprising. And as a kid, I was 9. And it just like, I remember walking up and right after he was shot, and it kind of sat with me. I don't know if I would call it a seed. At the time, it felt more like a rock. And I think, though, it made me feel like something isn't right. Like, this is a neighborhood that's kind of been raising me. And yet, like, this has happened perhaps because people weren't seeing each other. Like how, like, this guy wasn't seen by this police officer. Right. What? And I think, you know, that kind of, like, set me just thinking about how can we understand one another, you know, like how can we actually create spaces where, you know, we're dancing? How can we create spaces where we're understanding and seeing and listening? And I think a number of people along the way kind of showed me how storytelling was one way to do that, you know, to gather folks, to like kind of transcend some of these boxes we get stuck in and like allow ourselves to feel, you know. So that was one.
Thank you, Elle. That's a soundbite. And actually, while we're on this kind of Ellie as a young girl, I'm going to share a little clip of her.
Oh, no.
When she was 8 years old, so it's just an audio clip, so just you can hear it out. And she was being interviewed on a radio station for her activism. Here we go.
Good evening. This is WPSW and this is Sophie's Parlor. My name is Judy Smith and welcome to the Parlor. The first person I'd like to introduce, who will introduce the rest of the group, is Eleanor Walton. Good evening, Ellie.
Hi.
Glad to have you here. And what we're going to do this evening is several things. First of all, Eleanor is going to give us a little bit of political activism, her viewpoint on saving the rainforest. So first of all, back to you, Ellie. What would you like to say about the rainforest?
Well, just don't cut the rainforest down, because when I'm 60, the rainforest will be cut down, and most of the grown-ups will be dead.
How old are you now, Eleanor?
I'm 8, and I'm about to turn 9.
Okay, go on.
Don't go to fast food stores, because they cut down the rainforest to raise cattle.
To raise cattle for the beef, for the fast food. And so the more fast food burgers we eat, the more we're helping destroy the rainforest.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else you'd like to say about that?
Yeah. And most of the animals in the rainforest might get killed because they go with bulldozers cutting down the trees and chainsaws and everything.
Wow. No. So it's pretty amazing to see where Ellie's spirit has come from and how things haven't changed in terms of her really contributing to the world in so many beautiful ways. So thank you, Ellie. I'm going to ask Anand the same question. just kind of, brother, your formative years, what were you always envisioning for your life? And how did it bring you to design and architecture?
Thank you so much, Nimoba, for this question. My journey had been slightly unusual because I had no idea about the discipline initially. But in my family, there are 4 architects. I'm the 5th one. So while growing up, I was also seeing my cousins doing unusual works. And that's where it got me curious about the profession. And then when I completed my high school, and that's where I was starting to think about what I want to do. And I think that one of my cousins took me to different architects' office. He showed me how they work, what do they do about lives. And I think that it made me excited about the profession. I think that the real difference, I think, was when I started learning under Professor Doshi. I feel that was a significant change, because the way I was envisioning architecture, it changed completely when I started learning under him. Because what I understood was that architecture is not about just creating buildings, but it has a larger purpose for the society as a whole, because it directly connects to the life of people and well-being of the people, actually. So that's where I really got more excited about the possibilities in this discipline, because it's not limited to creating buildings. That was something very strong change in the whole process. And I feel that my undergraduate thesis with him was something where he used to talk a lot about nature, and he used to talk about shelter as a fundamental need for the human beings. And that's where something that also it really made me think about so many opportunities. And of course, I met so many good people on the way, from which I've learned, and I'm still learning. I'm still very young, and I think that they say that architecture is old man's game, and I think that that I am really looking forward to develop more in this. But yeah, this was, I think that the defining place was Sangat, where I worked for 5 years. And the graduate thesis with Professor Doshi. Those were like very important stages where it got me excited about the discipline. And
right. I love it. I love it. You said it's an old man's game, and it's just amazing to see what you've done in the early parts of your career so far. It's so inspiring, and look forward to sharing some of those visuals with our audience today. Thank you, Anandbhai. Dan, buddy, over to you. Similar question. How, you know, your journey transitioned quite 180 in a way. So what eventually got you to where you're at, or the direction you went in with music?
Well, Anand, I grew up in Chicago, and I wanted to be an architect. So I wrote a paper in eighth grade about architecture, and used to walk around the streets of Chicago and look at the buildings by Mies van der Rohe and Louis Sullivan and Hullabird and Root and Skidmore, Owings and Merrill, and you know, some of the tallest buildings in the world in Chicago, and also some, at the time anyway, some of the most innovative buildings in the world. And I loved architecture. And I was also raised to be a professional of some kind. I never went into architecture, but I did go into computer programming. My parents are attorneys, are lawyers. My father's a law professor, just recently retired after almost 50 years of teaching. So we were raised, three boys were raised to be more cerebral, not artists, and also more careful and conservative, not artists. We weren't raised to make it up as we go along and play it by ear. Ironically, playing it by ear was a strength I had in music since I was born, pretty much. So I was born with a lot of innate musical talent, but absolutely nowhere on the radar was a life making music. Actually, that's not true. A life making music, yes. A living making music, no. Not at all. Never considered a music college. Didn't know a lot of musicians. Never studied any of the things that I do for a living now, not explicitly. I majored in economics in college. And then because I'd been programming computers for fun, which is true, since I was a little boy, I became a professional computer programmer just for 5 or 6 years. And the music in my mind never, ever turns off. It's only in the last 10, 15 years have I realized, even if it isn't playing in a room, there's something musical happening in my brain, but especially if it's in the room, I never stop processing it, never stop visualizing it in a way. I imagine, Anand, the way you visualize forms that you see and spaces that you see, and Ellie, the way you visualize imagery of all kinds, that's the way sounds happen to my mind. They're never out of my consciousness, even in my sleep. So the turn for me came late, in the sense that at 27, I realized that I could be sarcastic and flip about it, but there's no reason to be. At 27, I realized that I was not born to be a computer programmer. Mm-hmm. I was born to be a musician. I had no idea how that worked. I didn't know anything about business, music business, record making, music production. I'd never been in a studio. I knew nothing about any of it. If I have a regret, it would be that at 17, somebody didn't bonk me over the head and say, "Danny, you're a musician." But nobody did. Instead, my parents shepherded their boys to college to be dutiful, you know, good citizens. And who can complain about an upbringing and a college degree and the capacity to balance, you know, Nemo, you say that I'm an unusual animal for making a living doing what I do. It is no accident. I was raised to make a living. I've never been a starving artist. I don't know if that phrase exists in India, but in America, you know, it's a little pejorative, but it's also just sort of it's a fact of an artist's life very frequently. A painter, a dancer, a tap dancer, or a jazz saxophonist. It's an uphill battle to make a living. The fees are low. And the premise is always that the joy you get from doing the job is its own form of pay, which it absolutely is. But it doesn't even remotely, you know, sometimes I say I'll stop charging when my bank starts accepting hugs for my mortgage. A because my parents raised me to do that. So since 27, that guy who was always a musician but was not raised to be one professionally, I'd like to think a middle ground where I am in fact making it up as I go along. It is in fact an unplanned life with very, very authentic messaging, very true music, but also an entrepreneur's sense of, I mean, in an uneducated way, it's not like I'm particularly good at building a business, but making a living, you know, I've said it, you know, especially in the last few years, it's already one of the great successes of my life that my son just turned 9 and has never been hungry for a day, thanks to my music and the contributions and generosity of people who like it. That is a triumph that I never, not for a day, take for granted.
Right.
So, you know, that's the humanitarian part is something we can talk about on your next question or whatever, but that the message, the humanity message, is a different story than that.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I want to share a video of Dan performing. Now, he's been so loving and giving during his time over the last 8 months, 9 months, 10 months, I don't know, just share his love and music virtually with people. So I'm going to share a few clips from that.
If this is my last song, if this is my final day, if tomorrow I'll be gone.
Can you guys hear the audio?
I can.
Oh, you can't? Okay, sorry about that. I can't hear.
What do I want to say? We speak so many languages, different clothing, different colors, different names. But different is only dangerous when we forget that in the heart we're all the same. Then I remember I am only one, but I am not alone. I don't need to do everything, no. I can right one wrong, I can sing one song. I don't need to do everything. Stevie Wonder sings in the key of life. Bobby McFerrin said, be happy, it'll be alright. Marvin Gaye showed the way, what's going on? It's a wonderful world, thanks to Louis Armstrong. Soul Asylum saved those runaway kids. John Lennon just imagined in the whole world did. John Denver took a sky with Tina Turner to the sea. Stevie Wonder to a higher left, John Legend and Common to freedom. Pete Seeger's gonna overcome. Bob Marley just smiled at the rising sun. Eminem will lose himself before the moment's gone. Miss Jackson knows the knowledge is what we want. Gloria Gaynor maintained that we're gonna survive. Tim McGraw wants us to live like we are the...
Don't be threatened, Nemo. I'm just trying to take your job with that one.
I love it, man. I want more rap songs by Daniel.
Yeah. Nobody else does, but thank you.
Ellie does too. Awesome. Thank you guys for that initial sharing. I actually want to get into some actually meaty stuff in the sense of your actual work, because all of you guys have amazing, beautiful work. And I wanted to start with Anandbhai. I was so inspired by this concept of a highly talented architect who, there's a seed of a thought that we wanted to build rebuild the blind school for our kids in Gandhinagar for our nonprofit Manav Sadhana. And we weren't sure. It's a big project. We needed a lot of funding and we didn't have it yet. But the seed was there. The seed of thought was there. And Anand was the one that we approached as kind of the person that would possibly be able to lead that, even though it wasn't set that this project was actually going to unfold. He took it as an opportunity to learn and grow. And when he spent a summer in Boston with his wife, who was at business or at graduate school there, and decided to volunteer at the Perkins. Is it the Perkins School for the Blind in Boston, which is the oldest blind school in America? And it was amazing because when I would talk to Anandbhai about it, he'd be like, yeah, I'm just volunteering at the library today. I'm like, what does it have to do with architecture? Anything? He's like, no, I'm just helping out wherever I can help out. Literally just serving. I don't even know, maybe people knew he was architect or not, but he was just trying to absorb the energy of being in this beautiful space so that he could eventually translate that into a space for our children in Ahmedabad. And just so inspiring the way he approaches a project, because he wants to make sure he has it in his blood. I just wanted you to share this next topic kind of is on the creative process for all three of you. And would love to hear, how do you take something like the blind school, for example, which is under construction right now, where, I mean, it's getting closer little by little, but how do you take a process from the beginning ideas to completion? What goes through it? And I want to give, again, like 3 to 4 minutes per response, if that's okay. Thank you, guys.
I think that I will slightly give a brief background about the project first. Sure. So this will really help to connect the story. So Viren Bhai from Mano Sadhana, he sent me to blind school in 2014 just to have a look at the school. And he didn't say that we have to build a new school or, you know, he just said that I should just go there and experience the place, actually. So I went there and I saw a school that was running on the first floor and the ground floor, the students were living. And I was quite shocked because the students came from very remote villages and small towns from different parts of Gujarat. And I've heard many stories about how they came, and it was quite unusual the way the school was running, and I also felt that on the ground floor the way they were living was not in a good condition. So I thought about it, and I went to Viren Bhai and I said that we could think about how could we make it better. And I think that he had some ideas in his mind. He didn't just say that, but he had some ideas. And then over time, with a lot of process, we came up with this idea that we'll build a new school and we'll convert the whole existing building into a hostel block so that they could live well, because it was a cramped situation. In one room, there were like 15 students living on a bunk bed. It was not a good situation. And I traveled in different parts of the country to see how schools for the blind have been conceived, but I could not come across any school which were designed particularly for the blind or partially blind students. They were always adaptive reused structures, and except in Mumbai, I was impressed with one school, but that was not something, it was designed still. It was an old colonial building. And I felt that in order to pursue a project of that nature, I think first we need to know the users very well, as it's not just to build a building for a school for them, but it's a very different challenge, because the visual sense that we all depend to navigate and to experience the world and to use spaces is not there. And how do you conceive architecture, which completely depends on the visual sense? So that was something, a very fundamental challenge. And that's where I came across to Perkins School for the Blind, which is in Boston, Massachusetts. And Helen Keller, Laura Bridgman, and Sullivan, they are like stalwarts who studied there. And it was the first school in the United States. In 1829, it started. And I think it's one of the most beautiful campuses that I've ever seen. I would even say that it beats Harvard campus as well. So it's that beautiful. And there, I feel the sole purpose was to just be there and experience how they teach to blind students and how blind students navigate spaces or how their structures were conceived, because some of the buildings were designed particularly for the blind children. And I think that the school has one of the best research facilities in the world. They produce braille machines, they do a lot of research on navigation techniques, which I feel that in India we are still quite behind in that way. So I think that for 5 months I just worked there in the library as well as the toddlers program where I was assisting a teacher. And they were very generous that when they came to know that we are designing the school, they gave all the information necessary, inputs and contacts, and they opened up their archives just for me to learn as much as I can. And I think that was a very important experience for me, because it was about understanding the users. And then I also used to show my designs to the teachers, and even I met, they put me into touch with America's leading researchers about accessibilities. So I used to go with our proposal to show them, and they were very generous to help in all ways. And I learned many lessons from there. And then I came back to India and we adapted so many things that I learned from there. And then, of course, we also changed the way we were conceiving architecture and communication, because I also wanted teachers and students to be participant in the design process. I did not feel that it's not that an architect comes and builds the project, but I feel that the stakeholders are equally important in the design process. So,
right. I'm gonna share some of those images while you're talking about it, and if we can finish in 1 minute now.
Sure.
Thank you.
So we did this tactile drawings, 3D printed drawings for the students and teachers, so that they could experience the structure. And it was a very collaborative process in that way. And yeah, these are some of the photographs. That this is my studio, and initially we were working with block models so that they could experience the built form, but then they were not able to understand the interior spaces. That's where we started doing the tactile drawings with 3D printing. So this is one of the drawings that students could experience by touch. So it was a very amazing experience for me also as an architect, that we were learning to communicate without visual sense. So so far this project is under construction, and we have done a lot of trials and errors with the students to make sure that spaces are for them. So I hope that once this is completely finished, we'll be able to share more details with it.
Thank you, Bhai. Awesome. So I know we're so tight on time, and I feel like letting you guys all talk for forever, actually. Dan, I'm going to ask you to share a little about an experience that has touched tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of lives through your music and the Water album, which is your 12th album that you created. But it came from a very unique process. I think you wrote over 100 songs in a short amount of time in the middle of Mother Nature. Amazing, inspiring story. And that album is probably one of my favorite albums of all musicians of all time. So I'm deeply moved by it. But could you share a little about that journey within a 5 minute context?
Yeah, I'm gonna burn through the first minute saying something that really touches me about Anand, about that process that you just described. You know, yeah. It's one thing to design a building or write a song or make a film that's, you know, that's a part of your own process, your own voice, your own feelings, your own life story, right? We are gonna do that whether we mean to or not, right? We're gonna tell things about ourselves when we're creating what Nemo, obviously you too, whatever we're creating is about us But the effort, the conscious effort and extra effort that you just described is empathy and kindness in action. That's the thing, is that building is not just an architect flexing his muscles and showing his craft. That building, it's stunning. I would love to see that building someday, because it sounds like you didn't take a single decision for granted, right? That everything about it was through, sorry for the ironic pun, but it was all through someone else's eyes. It was pure empathy. And in a way that's really impossible for us seeing people to fully comprehend. But the first thing I noticed is, for example, that hallway photo has absolutely no obstructions. I assume that's going to continue to be, and it's just that kind of thing. That is kindness. That's doing your job with kindness, you know. Similar, by the way, to how Ellie does her job. Specifically, I'm talking about with the videos that she's done with Nemo for our music. You know, I have had calls and emails. How much does Ellie charge to do your videos? Because they're absolutely spectacular. They're theater ready. And I say, I'm embarrassed to answer the question. You're going to have to ask. Because Ellie is more generous than Nemo and I have been with the mastery of her craft that she gives. And actually, Ellie, your story is fascinating. That you saw it as a dance and that you wanted to see everybody's joy come out. And all I wanted to say is, I can tell from the videos you've made that you love face, you love the beauty and the joy in someone's face. It is an emphasis of your work, at least that I've seen from our videos. It is something you like to bring out. And my God, do you film and show it beautifully? I mean, just truly beautifully. Anyway, so Nemo, I'm sorry, I'll abbreviate this story exceptionally. The following is the shortest telling of the story in the history of my life. Anyway, you ready? Because brevity is not my specialty. 7 years of making a living making music in LA, Los Angeles in the United States is approximately the most crowded, chaotic, least organized, most disparate place you can be, really. It's unorganized. It's kind of an awful city as cities go. I've been in some good cities. LA isn't really a beautiful place. There's beaches, but it's the weather's great. Let's just say that. Anyway, after 7 years, I took a leap of faith and went to a little town in Utah called Moab, which is in Red Rock, a Red Rock paradise for outdoor people. Cliffs and canyons and arches and national parks, some of the darkest skies in North America. And I went in the winter when very, very few people were there. And in fact, I had the national parks to myself, literally the only person in the park several times. And these are parks that get 1 million, 2 million, 3 million visitors a year. And this was in 2006. And I spent 3 months hiking and laying out under the stars, which I'd never seen really before. I grew up in Chicago, then moved to LA. There are no stars. In Utah, there are stars by the billions. I'd never seen anything like it. The first time I saw it, I cried. I laid out on the main road in Arches National Park in the middle of the night and cried, lying on my back on that road in the winter, in my winter coat, looking at how many stars, looking at the Milky Way galaxy. And out of that time, yes, 126 songs I wrote during those 3 months. The trick of it was that I didn't go to do any of that. I went without an agenda at all. And from into that void came the scenic beauty, the quiet, and a feeling from that natural setting that maybe I was taking myself a little bit too seriously. And maybe I was telling myself that I was in control of things that I'm not in control of, that my plans will come true if I work hard enough, that I deserve credit for a yes, blame for a no, that there's some guarantee of immortality or result, right? I was kind of living, to some extent, the message of the Tao, which is a book I stumbled on in the Moab Public Library while I was there. And I have been singing these songs. So the songs that you know, Nemo, that's 11 of them that became an album called Water, which might as well be a companion album to the Tao, which annoys me a little because I thought I was having some great revelation. And instead, it was written 4,000 years ago and I just paraphrased it poorly. But
hey, man, I never read the Tao, but I heard your album and it gave me all that. So it did the job.
Thank you. And the Tao is in public domain, so I don't owe them any royalties, so that's nice. But like the Tao will say something like, be done with knowing and your worries will disappear. That's a big statement, especially for a child of lawyers. Be done with knowing sounds like you're giving yourself a free pass. Sounds like you're taking the lazy way out. Sounds like you're not doing enough research, right? That's how I go, be done with knowing. But if you think about all the things we tell ourselves we need to know, very little of it is true. Very few of our plans play out the way we intend them to. And if we do, and Nemo, you've heard me sing it and say it, if we do today, the thing that feels true today with maximum kindness, maximum commitment, that can be enough. That is the seed to plant today, not a 5 or 10 year plan, nor the pressure of what anyone built me to be, expects me to say or sing, expected me to do, including myself, family, society. Today, if I'm true and kind, then the work I do today is by a very real definition, enough. And tomorrow I do it again. And that was the real revelation of my time in Utah. And that was nowhere near as brief as I thought it was going to be.
Thank you. Thank you, Dan. I'm going to play a little soundbite from one of my favorite and most inspiring songs from that album, from his experience in Moab. It's called Planting Seeds, Daniel's original version. Just a soundbite from it.
Whatever goes will grow, whatever dies will die, whatever works will grow, whatever
lies. Yeah, Nemo muted himself. There he is.
Thank you, Dan, for gifting us with all this beautiful music. And what an amazing process and journey that had on just that process of you going within yourself and how that came out and how that impacted so many of us, known and unknown. So thank you. I'm going to ask Ellie to share about, I feel like with Ellie, Dan, you mentioned it, because of her spirit, kind of wherever you go, Els, your spirit really carries an opportunity to grasp and embrace whatever is going on. And I feel like the story of the music video, Just Like You, is just a magical unfolding of happenings. And I'd love for you to share that process because it was not planned. And it all happened all of a sudden in the middle of a continent that you don't live in. So if you can share a little about that.
Yeah, where to begin? Yeah, Dan, I love what you said about, just like it being like so much beautiful art emerges when there's no agenda, right? And I think for me, for my process, which is everything really, you know, like it's never an idea that emerges in my studio somewhere that I'm like, I'm gonna go to Liberia. no, there, I think it always begins really with an invitation, you know, like I think there's a lot of folks who feel like they want to share their story, you know, like they feel misrepresented, they feel like they're not being seen or heard. And so there was an invitation from a school from the deaf in Liberia, and they were feeling like, you know, there was a huge stigma about, you know, being deaf in that community. Like people felt like they were cursed at birth. And so they invited me. They said, Ellie, come, let's like figure out a way to share our story. So so I showed up, and again, you might at that moment think like, oh, as a filmmaker, you might write a script, you might like story map. No. Show up, let's do a circle, let's go around, let's hear from you, let's collaborate. I think for me, it's like all about co-creation, you know, like it's like recognizing that, you know, this is your story. So like, what do you want to say? Like, what matters to you? Because I feel like art at its best, like it's just like open heart surgery, right? Like, I mean, Dan, your songs like open my heart. Nemo, your songs open my heart. Looking at those buildings open my heart. And like, we need that to connect, and we need to do that more than anything right now, especially. And so I think in order to do that, like for me, that process comes from really seeing folks. And like, so, and that doesn't happen in the editing room. That happens when you show up and like just ask folks what they want to say. So I think we want to like share your super. This is young. It's a school for the deaf. 8-year-olds up to 18-year-olds, and almost every single one of them shared something connected to dancing or singing or, and I think I remember like listening and saying, wait, but they're deaf. And like, just like my own like biases were just like, no, like how do you hear the music? It's like, well, we feel the vibration. So this is going around. And then let me like back up, because there's another part of this story that's really important. So 2 months earlier, I met this man called Chad Harper, who's an amazing soul, at the Gandhi Ashram in India. And turns out, like, you know, he's from Brooklyn. He runs an amazing organization called Hip Hop Saves Lives. And he was just happened to be going to Liberia at the same time I was. So here we are at the circle. In walks in Chad. And people are sharing about like what music means to them, that dancing is their superpower. And he is like, I could see his brain sort of like, and he starts writing this hook. And he's like, okay, let's make a music video. I'm like, okay, yeah. Like, and they were all game. Let's make a music video. Well, how do we do that? Well, turns out there's this hip hop star in Liberia. And we hop on a motorcycle to his bar and say, hey, do you want to make a music video with our school? And he said, yes, which is like also so much of my process and philosophy. It's like, again, ideas don't come out of nowhere. They come from showing up and just like being open. And like the number one, like the first rule of improv, and I'm terrible at improv, but the first rule of improv is yes and. Like you don't block, you just say yes and what else? So yes, and we're gonna find this hip hop star. We're on a motorcycle, we're getting him and he's coming. And boom, we stayed up for like 3 days. And he showed up and we filmed and we captured the song. And you know what, that song that we created together ended up being shared to the, I think it was like the Prime Minister of Liberia ended up seeing it. And then these people at the School for the Deaf would walk down the street and they say, oh, I saw you in that video. And again, it's like coming full circle to why they even invited me there. It's like, we weren't being seen. We weren't being heard. I want to create something. And now there's this video that we're in and we're dancing and people see us now.
So, amazing, yeah. Alice.
Happen.
And this is, and like you said, you just have the capacity because of who you are to show up. I want to show this video because it gives me the chills every time. I know we don't have too much time, so may not be able to go through all of it, but enjoy it. This is what happens when Ellen or Joy Walton ends up in Liberia. Can you guys hear the audio? Because I can't.
Yeah, it's your boy Famous, NYC to LIB. The song is dedicated to David Waterby. Hope School for the Deaf. Your passion inspires us all. Let's go.
You could talk with your hands and listen with your eyes. Then you will realize that I'm just like you, oh, I'm just like you. I'm just like you, oh, I'm just like you. I'm just like you, oh, I'm just like you. I'm just like you,
oh. The fact is that we all are the same, and it's nice, we all be treated the same. Recognize me, take me as a friend. We can dance and play with opportunity and chance. I know I'm deaf, I know I can hear. We can change the world, it doesn't matter of my life. Recognize me, don't criticize me. The truth is that I can do it for my people. They are the feature, give them attention. Provide the chance for more innovation. Just like you, I can do the thing you do. I'm important, what's it and disgusting? United we stand, divided we fall. All we need is only one love. All we need is only one love.
You could talk with your hands and listen with your eyes. Then you will realize that I'm just like you, oh, I'm just like you. I'm just like you, oh, I'm just like you. I'm just like you, oh, I'm just like you. I'm just like you, oh.
No, I can't hear, but yes, I can't see. And what I see is that you don't see me. You might not understand the movement of my hands, but you need to understand I still got a plan. I still got a dream. I want to be seen. I will be seen. And dreams come true. And not just for you. If I persevere, I'm into the life as if I could hear. Deaf and what? That ain't what's up. Boy, don't let that spill out your cup. Boy, I'd advise you to pick that up. They calling me dumb, boy, shh, for what? Better change that. That's a fact. I got skills you can't imagine, black. I talk with my hands. Listen with my eyes. Time realize
I'm just like you, oh. I'm just like you. I'm just like you, oh. I'm just like you. I'm just like you, oh. I'm just like you. I'm just like you, oh.
If you are proceeding, I'm just like you. If you are dieter, I'm just like you. If you are minister, I'm just like you. If you are policeman, I'm just like you. Oh, oh, oh. I'm just like you. Oh, oh.
Did that work? Could everybody hear it properly? Okay, because I could not. Thank you, Ellie, for sharing your gifts.
That Ellie Walton video right there.
That is an Ellie Walton video.
Stunning, right? Just stunning.
Very how powerful.
Much, how much affection and respect comes through. Just beautiful. Absolutely. Yeah.
How do you guys, how do you guys, we have limited time. I'm not sure, actually, questions from the audience right now, but I'm going to just keep going on right now because we only have like 10, 15 minutes left. How do you guys stay grounded and rooted? I mean, there's so many factors that play a role in our lives. All of you are in, you have family. And what you do requires to be in a space of, you know, it requires a whole other headspace. What are your practices that keep you grounded? What are your practices that allow you to get into a flow, if we want to call it a creative flow? What advice do you have for others, artists that want to balance the practical elements of life, living, family, and still make and create whatever beauty that's coming from their heart? Dan?
Absolutely no no ability to balance. Thank you for asking.
I wanted to share. I didn't get to share the intro. Dan is one of the most amazing husbands and fathers, and it is really it's been a blessing to see how much it means to him to balance his artistry and his family life. So Dan, I just wanted to share that while you.
Thank you. That's nice of you. Ellie, you'll understand. It's one of my most successful jokes for the last 9 years is that I've been tired since my wife's water broke. You know what? I don't have any practices. I don't have any spiritual practices that are explicitly that like any self-help book would ever tell you to do. I don't know if that's true. My center comes from making, and this is going to sound like a bumper sticker, very simple list, but it really is true. Sitting next to the dog, holding my wife's hand, hanging out with my little boy, playing a little instrumental piano, singing. The last 9 months, it's been very rewarding and beautiful to build a little community on Facebook of people for whom I can reasonably feel that showing up for them and with them has made a difference for them. That makes a difference for me. So I don't sit and pray. I don't read self-help books. I will say a particularly grateful person. And I really do. I mean, just your video, the video brings it out, something that I say to my boy. I've said it many times, and we grew up in Orange County. Right now we're in Orange County, California. But I will tell him on occasion, there are homeless children within 2 or 3 miles of this beautiful neighborhood. And the fact that we can turn on the tap and have clean drinking water, that is not true for millions and millions of people. And the fact that you go to sleep in a quiet, beautiful, safe bedroom, and you know your mommy and daddy love you and we kiss you goodnight, and you know we'll be there in the morning, that is tragically not true for every child, far from it. So there are ways that I stay extremely present in my life, which become the songs.
Yep.
You know what I mean? I'm not Saint Danny. I'm not Monk Danny. I'm not praying Danny. And Nemo, you know this better than anybody, because Nemo and I, for those of you watching, Nemo and I do shows all the time. And I love our music that we've made together. And I love working with you and being on stage with you. And I can't help but be a smartass during our shows and be a goofball. It's the only way I know how to be, A, and B, Nemo is just so impressive, so noble. A part of me can't sell myself as being nearly as good a person as Nemo is. So I'll say, yeah, this guy gives away his CDs and this guy has a kid and a mortgage, for God's sake. So you
yeah, can, really bad thing, Danny.
You know, anyway. I like no BS in my music, and I like to be true and real and kind, and that's just the way I do my best to be, and that's my practice.
Right. And it shines, Dan. I think it's amazing to watch you perform live, because the authenticity of your words is, I mean, for any, I think, musician, when it's authentic, it makes you get the chills, and you do that every time for your audiences. So,
oh, thanks.
Awesome. Thank you. Anandbhai, similar question. I mean, all three of you have elements of such stillness and groundedness in different capacities, but like what works for you to help you? Oh, you're on mute, buddy. Sorry.
Can you hear me now? Okay. I would like to carry forward what Daniel just said about many circumstances that we are surrounded with. Just to put in perspective, I think in our context it is even more evident, Daniel, because I think 70 million people in India are living in informal settlements, and they don't have access to proper sanitation and right. and proper drinking water. And 90 million people earn less than $1 a day. So that's something, a big picture of the country. And coming to our profession, I feel that we are trained as architects to serve a very particular segment of society. You know, it's only 1 or 2% of the entire population of the country who can afford our services. And that's where, as a practitioner, I also have been thinking, because of course of all these opportunities that Manu Sadhna gave and other projects that I'm working, it has given me a different perspective about the profession. And Nimu, by what you are asking about the balance, and when you think that you want to also work for 98% of the population, it's not easy, because as I was saying, that 90 million has only $1 than a day they are making, and how can they afford architecture services? So what we are trying to do is that I try to work on projects of a nature in which really people need fundamental shelters and basic things. At the same time, I teach at School of Architecture. I give lectures. That's where I balance my income, because of course I get professional fees from various projects, and they're fine. But also I like to work slowly, and that's where it's also very hard for me to balance, because, like, for example, this School for the Blind, it took 6 years to build this project. I mean, to conceptualize and to now build, and the kind of money that you get as a fees is nothing almost. You lose the money in fact. But what I feel is that the kind of satisfaction that you get, and I think this is a currency. Your work is a currency. It's not like money, but your work is your currency. And I think that that's something which is important for me. And I don't know if this is a good move, but at the moment, I think this is what I believe, and I would like to continue working this way, hopefully more and more. And I think that I try to balance academic and practice in a way to make my family, because my wife Mariana is an architect as well. So she also teaches. I also teach at School of Architecture. We teach in Ahmedabad and UK. So that's where we try to balance our work that we are doing. Not to say that we don't want to work professionally. We want to, but also we are trying to find new ways, because this is not a very usual way to practice architecture. So
yeah, definitely unusual, because I remember when we were working on the Jai Jagat Theater, say, Anand Bhai, what would be your cost? And he tells me, Nimo Bhai, I just don't want to lose any money, but you can pay me whatever you feel is fair. That was his response to building. I'll just show you a picture of what he built, because it's just phenomenal. And the spirit of, this is his initial sketches. I'm going to fly through it because we are out of time. And here's kind of the full layout. This was a 2.5 year, and here's the end product with hundreds of our children and family in the Jai Jagat Theater, in the space that Anand conceptualized and built from his heart and soul, the same place that he says, whatever you want to offer for me for that is fine. It's just amazing. By you're saying that it's a need to be a professor because you balance it, but you and Mariana both truly servants of society and trying to offer your best and trying to sustain yourself so that you can do that. And it's a true inspiration with the skill level and the talent that you guys have, and how you're offering it to the 98% versus the 2% that can afford it, you know? So thank you, Bhai, for being you. same question. You got Cypress and Rye and Brian and your family, and how do you balance everything? I've seen this lady pregnant, I think twice, with a camera on her hand running around.
They were helping me. They were like pushing up the camera from under here.
How do you balance it all?
Man. Well, you know, a question that I always come back to, especially with my work, is just how do I keep my heart open? Because like so much of what I do is like asking or witnessing, honoring folks who are opening their hearts to me. So for me, it's like, then how do I show up and be that as well? And I think it's changed over the years. And like, so being flexible with myself has been huge. Like, I remember when I met you, Nemo, and you, Dan, even though I hadn't met you in person, was like doing the grateful video. And I'm forever grateful for that grateful video because it brought us together. And like, we were staying up all night. We were like getting people's like submissions from all over the world. We were, you know, you were feeding me bakri with peanut butter and chocolate and like just like going at it and just in flow for days and all night. And like so much of creativity can have that energy that I love and is magnetic. And then you let it into the world and you have like, you don't know who's going to receive it and you crash and then, you know, wake up and start again. And obviously that doesn't always jive with two toddlers. And, you know, and sometimes, you know, initially I kind of fought against that. It's like, you are going on my back. We're going on a shoot and we're going to skip nap and we're not going to do like any of your needs because we are showing up for these folks that we're filming, you know. And I think, you know, as time has gone by and I recognize that, like, actually, no, I don't need to hold on to this idea of what an artist, the artist of my like pre-motherhood was, right? Like, let me be flexible with me and like, let me actually grow with these kiddos of mine. And let me like, you know, I'm late for this shoot, but you know what? I'm gonna sit on this sidewalk and like watch the ants walk by and like, let me see what actually that is giving to me in this moment. Cause like what I do as a filmmaker is see. And I feel like my kids have just like given me this opportunity to see again. Cause kids just are born as we're all born with this pure sense of wonder. Like I'll never forget going to the zoo the first time with Rye. He's like, mama, look at that cardinal. And like, it's the cardinal flying through, like not the chimpanzee or the cheetah, you know? He's like, it's so red. I'm like, yes, that cardinal is so red. Like, and just 2 days ago, oh my gosh, we were collecting, I'm homeschooling right now. It's like, oh my gosh, my heart goes out to all you parents, artists out there, homeschooling. And he was like, man, this leaf, it's brown. And like, you know, the things like, yeah, it's brown and beautiful. And look at how it's crinkled, like how they see, it like reminds me how to see. And I think by just being present with them and not, you know, pushing up against where I need to be has allowed my heart to open and then be more present when I am on a shoot, when I am with people. And I think too, because like, you know, motherhood, it's like this universal thing, you know, we all have a mother, you know, and I think it's given me this gift to connect to. And I think owning that has really kept me balanced as opposed to pushing up against it. Cause like, it's impossible to balance. Yeah, Dan, I don't know how to balance what I do, but I think owning that I'm like constantly juggling and dropping balls and that's okay. And like connecting to folks who feel that too, like that feeds me and that allows me to connect deeper with the folks that I'm filming with.
Thank you to the three of you. It's been a special and very quick hour or hour and a half. And I'm gonna try to find a question from one of our audience members and connect it to a thought that I wanna ask about you as well. But we have somebody that wrote, I loved a quote I came across. An artist is not a special kind of person, but every person is a special kind of artist. Could you speak a bit to that? Any story or advice of how ordinary people can bring creativity and beauty within and without through their lives? Now, we only have literally like 30 seconds each type of time left. So maybe in the spirit of that, thank you for all those people that had shared questions, and we apologize that we couldn't get to all of them. But in the spirit of that, from all of your guys' journeys, in the spirit of what, how you, all three of you live, which is serving, I see it as serving through your art. You all three are serving deeply and impacting many lives. What's the feedback you give to like this beautiful soul who shared this question to each person, because everybody's a special artist in their own way. What kind of feedback would you give or advice from your heart, how to share people's passions and arts with others, or just for them to practice it themselves? And feel free to chime in when you
feel. Go first.
Yeah, thanks, Dan.
My suggestion is to do the thing that when you're doing it, time moves incredibly quickly and incredibly slowly at the same time, so that you lose track of time because it's so much fun, or it's so rewarding, so immersive. And as you do it, surrender any illusion that you know whether it's any good, whether anyone else will like it, whether it will earn you a dollar or a compliment, or whether it will even leave the room when you're finished. If you stay entirely in it, you are doing your maximum artistry, as far as I'm concerned. Let everything else come after that. And it's a little cliched to say, but I do sincerely think it's true, that as long as you're leaving no victims in the way, in your wake, as you do this art form, whatever it is, as long as there are no victims, it is the highest service to humanity to be the truest you. And the truest you is doing something that you'll do, whether anybody pays you or not, whether anybody's watching or not, whether anybody notices or not. The three of us, I have no doubt, would do some form of what we do, whether anyone cared or noticed or paid, right? It is service to the world and service to ourselves simultaneously. That's what that kind of immersion and bliss is. And it could be skiing. I mean, I have no judgment about what it is. There's something. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that visual, Dan, of you guys definitely are the type of human beings that are not doing it for some pat on the back.
Yeah, and no.
You feel that. You feel that.
Clearly, none of us are trying to get rich off of our, I mean, really, right? We're not doing this to get rich in any financial sense. Clearly, I can say that even though I am that entrepreneur guy. But no, I'm absolutely not in it for the money. 0%. And obviously that's true about the two of you as well, three of you as well. So, yeah.
Anand Bhai, any thoughts?
I think that, in history, it is always been discussed that is art needed as a society? And I think that it's a very fundamental question. And I really think that it's very powerful, because it's not purely utilitarian. It is something which philosophically and spiritually touches the society. I think something like poetry or music or filmmaking or architecture, I think that they are somehow interrelated. I feel that when both of them were talking, and even I'm reading different books, I sometimes feel that music or filmmaking or poetry has an ephemeral quality that probably anyone can enjoy sitting anywhere in the place, experiencing in a very different way. It could touch many people. Whereas architecture, I felt that it is very rooted to the place, culture, and where you are creating that. Also, it touches many people. So. For me, even as this question, I also question these things as a professional, that what art is about and what it could do to the society. And I think I don't have much advice because I'm still learning also, but I feel that we should like what we are doing and we should question things on the way, how we have been seeing things, the world as we, not arrogantly questioning, but questioning with a deep commitment, I feel. And I think that's where we find our own paths, different paths, by just getting confronted with the situation. And then from that situation, you try to nourish yourself and to grow in many different forms. So I don't know. I don't have the very straight answer to that. It's a very difficult question, but I think this is some of my thoughts that I felt that I would share.
Yeah, thank you, Wei. And I'll pass it on to Ellie before we close up here.
Yeah, I love that quote. Man, I definitely believe that we were all just born with this God-given gift to create and express and play. And like too young, we are told to like stop doing that. fit in this box and sit in your chair. And, you know, and I think it is so important to reclaim that because it's in us. And like just what you said, Dan, like, you know, if we're going to show up as our best selves, like we gotta understand who we are. And how do we do that? Like we do that by creating, you know, like by playing, like by you know, writing a poem down, writing like dancing, like just like, and it's hard to do that and it can feel kind of awkward because we're told to like act a certain way. But I think as much as we can all like tap back into that place that we all know because we're all born that way, like carve that out for yourself and like start with you. Like you don't need like a fancy idea. Like you just need to begin with yourself and how you feel. Cause like I always come back to that like Maya Angelou quote, which, and I'm gonna paraphrase, but like it's, people will forget what you say, people will forget what you do, but people will never forget how you make them feel. Mm-hmm. And like that's what art does. Like it makes people feel. So like connect to that space in you and like how you're feeling right now and like express that how, like however feels true to you, you know? And then we could show up as our full selves, and that's what we need right now.
Thank you guys. It's a blessing to have you three together here on this call. And we're at 10 o'clock, at least my time, which is, I think, the time that we're supposed to be ending. Before we do a minute of silence together with everybody and close up, I'm just going to ask, I'm just going to have a one-liner and have you finish the line, the sentence. And then we'll kind of get to a place where we close off tonight's call. I dream of, or I wish for, let's say, I hope for. Let's go with that. I hope for, and you can finish the line, whatever comes to your heart. And whoever feel it, I'm not going to pick somebody, so whoever is ready.
It's a very difficult one, but this one-liner that this yesterday in the email that we got and said, and I was remembering that, I don't know if this makes sense, but I would like to share that. I really like this book, Little Prince, by Antoine de Exupéry. And I occasionally take time to read it again. And like I was reading very recently, and I always find this one line very profoundly, is that the fox says to the little prince, is that it is with the heart you see things rightly, what is essential is invisible to the eyes. So this is the one liner that.
Can you repeat that, Anandbhai?
It is with the heart you see things rightly, what is essential is invisible to the eyes. So it was quite inspiring.
Love it. Thank you. Else, I hope for, and again, you can go wherever you want with it. You don't have to finish that sentence, but yeah.
Okay. I hope for a world where we spend every Saturday morning dancing in the streets together and listening to one another.
Dan?
Well, you know what? What comes to mind, to be honest, is a little local for my sake, for my perspective, but I'm going to say it anyway. At the moment, I wish for America to be the country that I always was proud of it being, whether it ever really was that or not. A place of kindness and justice and compassion and self-evaluation and self-improvement and rule of law, sanity, if you ask me that question in the moment, my heart goes, I go to a little brokenheartedness about the state of America, and especially its unkindness, the apparent unkindness of so many. That's surprising to me. That's been heartbreaking to me. Right. Yep. That would be my wish for.
Thank you. The three of you are some of the most humble and talented souls that at least I know closely in my lives. And I am honored and humbled every moment to know I can reach out and just have that friendship and that brotherhood and with all three of you. And I love you three deeply. And thank you guys for joining this call and sharing a moment, a glimpse of your life with a few others on this planet. And may God bless three of you and everybody that's on this call around the whole world. But may God bless the three of you to keep strong and keep sharing your heart and love with the world. Because it truly is a blessing. So thank you all. We're gonna end with a minute of silence. And we want to thank everybody that joined today, and thank Service Space and our family of volunteers that are constantly behind the scenes, just trying to provide seeds of hope, love, inspiration, connectivity, togetherness, family, service. It's just amazing the amount of love that we have in our family circle around the world. So we bow down to that. Thank you all for joining today. We're just going to do a minute of silence. And then Devin, maybe take it from there. Love you all.
Thank you for listening to a recording of Awaken Calls. To access archives, visit us at www.awaken.org. And to get more involved, volunteer at www.servicespace.org.